Okay. Thank you for waiting. The shiur this morning, first of all, is sponsored by Naomi and David Sandel, marking the yard site today of her father, Yaakov and Shmuel Aryeh. And the Neshama should have an aliyah. She'll see much nachas ruach, and the Torah mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. The entire family is involved in. We are poised today to learn the very last Mishnah in the first parak of Pirkei Avos. So that's in the Art Scroll Sidurim, page 548. It's Parak Aleph, Mishnah Yud Ches. It's 1:18. And the Mishnah there says, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Kayum. Rav Shimon Gamliel says the world endures on three things: al hadin, v'al ha'emes, v'al hashalom, on justice, on truth, and on peace. Shenemar, as it says, emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sha'areichem, truth and the judgment of peace, you should judge, you should adjudicate in your gates. So let's start first talking, as we always do, about the identity of the Tana who's sharing these words with us, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So who is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? So as we pointed out last week in a different context, the answer to that question is not as simple as one might think at first glance. We had last week in Mishnah Zion, Shimon beno Omer, Shimon his son, said, and the reference was Shimon to Shimon the son of Rabban Gamliel. So you would think that Shimon the son of Rabban Gamliel and Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel are likely the same person. There are some Mefarshim who say that, but it's very much a minority of Mefarshim who make that statement. Some Mefarshim understand that the person who authored Mishnah Yud Zayin and the person who authored Mishnah Yud Ches are one and the same person. In Mishnah Yud Zayin, he's referred to as Shimon Beno, Shimon Rabban Gamliel's son, because that was before he was Ola Lagdula, before he stepped into the role of being the Nasi, so he was just Shimon. And in Mishnah Yud Ches, we're introduced to the same person, but after he achieved the lofty title of being the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, so the same person is referred to as Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. A minority of Mefarshim take that position. Most Mefarshim understand that we're talking about two different people, but two different people who are a grandfather and a grandson. And again, let's just revisit a little bit of the family tree of Hillel HaZaken that we spoke about last time. So We learned earlier in the Perek Mishnayos about Hillel HaZaken. Hillel HaZaken, again, the famous Hillel, had a son by the name of Shimon. That Shimon had a son by the name of Rabban Gamliel. That was the first Rabban Gamliel referred to as Rabban Gamliel HaZaken. That Rabban Gamliel had a son, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, right, who is a great grandson of Hillel HaZaken. That individual, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, is the person everyone agrees who is referred to in Mishnah Yud Zayin. That Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was martyred when the Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. He was the Nasi at the time that when the Romans, you know, broke into Yerushalayim, destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, as we spoke about last week. He was executed by the Romans together with the Kohen Gadol at that time, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. And we famously and movingly recall the story. What's that? Yeah, so we recall that story every Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. When we read on Yom Kippur, Ela Eskira, and when we read on Tisha B'Av, Arzei HaLevana, the two poems that deal with the Asara Harugei Malchus, they were the first two of the Asara Harugei Malchus, the 10 Tanoim who were martyred by the Romans. People point out, even though poetically we talk about the 10 martyrs martyred by the Romans, they were clearly not all killed at the same time. But as the poems make clear, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, the Nasi, and Reb Shmuel Kohen Gadol were killed at the same time. you know, because again, it's the two ranking, highest ranking Rabbanim and Klal Yisrael. The Romans wanted to make an example of them. They killed them simultaneously. So that was Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who was in Mishnah Yitzayin. Most Mepharshim understand. So he had a son in turn, Rabban Gamliel, who's often referred to as Rabban Gamliel de Yavne, the Rabban Gamliel who served after the Churban Abayis, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He served as the head of the Sanhedrin when it moved to the town of Yavne. That Rabban Gamliel, the second Rabban Gamliel, had a son, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Most Mepharshim understand that it's that individual, the second Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who's being referred to in Mishnah Yud Ches. This Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel is the father of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who wrote the Mishnayos. Right? And indeed, we find, if you just turn over the page to the beginning of Perek Beis, right, the first Mishnah in Perek Beis is Rebbe Omer, Rebbe said. Rebbe, of course, is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the rabbi par excellence. So it's a straight line from the very end of Perek Aleph to the beginning of Perek Beis. The Perek Aleph ends off with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the father of Rebbe, and Perek Beis begins with Rebbe himself. Again, the line of the genealogy goes straight. A little bit about the background of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. He primarily operated during the period of time after the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Right? The Bar Kokhba rebellion took place around the year 135 of the Common Era. We know that the Jews were convinced that just as the first Beis HaMikdash was restored 70 years after it was destroyed, so too the Jews were convinced that, or some Jews were convinced, that the second Beis HaMikdash would be restored approximately 70 years after it was destroyed. And we know that Shimon Bar Kokhba appeared on the scene, indicated that he was Moshiach. He had a major follower in the person of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva signed off on the fact that Bar Kokhba was the Moshiach. And there was a long 2.5 year battle against the Romans, at the end of which Bar Kokhba was defeated. The city of Beitar, where Bar Kokhba had his last stronghold, was annihilated, destroyed by the Romans. They massacred Jews left and right. They were very, very angry at the Jews for having led this rebellion against the Roman Empire. Again, it was perhaps one of the most successful revolutions against the Roman Empire in Roman history. They held out for 2.5 years, which, when you think about it, you know, there were a bunch of yeshiva guys, you know, fighting against, you know, the Roman Empire. It's pretty impressive, you know, by any standard. After the Bar Kokhba rebellion was crushed, the Romans, under the leadership of Hadrian, who was the emperor at that time, put into place a series of very, very harsh anti-Jewish decrees. They wanted to get back against the Jews for, you know, rebelling against them for such a period of time. And most of the other Asara Haruge Malchus, you know, besides Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, most of the other Asara Haruge Malchus were killed at that time during what were called the Hadrianic persecutions, the persecutions of the Emperor Hadrian, Adrianus, as we refer to him in Jewish history. They clamped down on the Jews with an iron fist after the crush of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, because they wanted to show the Jews, you know, we're boss, you know, you're not going to mess with us. You know, we're going to show you that, you know, a chutzpah, that you try to be Jewish and keep up Judaism. And many of the great Tannaim who were martyred, Rabbi Akiva, you know, being the most famous of them, were martyred at that time after the Bar Kokhba rebellion fell. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was a young man after the crush of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, and much of his activity was during those years of anti-Semitic persecution following the crushing of the Bar Kokhba rebellion and during those years of the Hadrianic persecutions. He was a colleague of many of Rabbi Akiva's students. Right, we know this time of year, we famously talk about the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that died. And then the end of the story, of course, we know, is in the Gemara Yevamos, that Rabbi Akiva went out and taught five new Talmidim, and those five new Talmidim were the ones who basically carried on the legacy of Rabbi Akiva into the next generation. So those Talmidim and their Talmidim were the contemporaries of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, whom we're reading about today. Despite the fact that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was after all the Nasi, you know, the head of Klal Yisrael at that particular time, he was distinguished for his anivus. One of the things that really stood out about him was his tremendous humility, his tremendous modesty. So, for instance, the Gemara tells in Bava Metzia the following story, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, again, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, once felt that he had been slighted by his friend, Rabbi Lazar Reb Shimon. Right? Now, just to get get a sense of who's who over here, Rabbi Lazar Reb Shimon was the son of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who himself was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, right, the same Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai who's buried in Meron, so we know that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai went into the cave, you know, with his son Rabbi Lazar. So this is that Rabbi Lazar, right? So that Rabbi Lazar Reb Shimon was a contemporary of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. His father, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, was a contemporary of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and Rabbi Lazar Reb Shimon were once having some kind of a conversation, and Rabbi Yehuda Anasi felt that he was treated badly by Rabbi Lazar Reb Shimon, that something that he had said, you know, was a slight in some way. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi went to his father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and said, you know, I feel I was sort of, you know, mistreated by this other Gadol B'Yisrael. And the reaction of the father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, was, don't be concerned. Rabbi Lazar Reb Shimon is Ari ben Ari. He's the lion, the son of a lion. His father is the illustrious Reb Shimon bar Yochai. You, my son, you're an Ari, you're a lion, but Ben Shuel, the son of a fox. So, you know, it shouldn't bother you so much that, you know, perhaps, you know, you felt that you were slighted by Rabbi Lazar Reb Shimon. Look, you know, you're both great people, but at least he has Yichus, and you never are stuck with me, right? So again, stories like that, which exist, you know, tell a little bit about the anivus, the humility of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. In that same Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi speaks about three great humble people who existed since the beginning of time, right? One of them was Yonasan, the son of Shaul HaMelech. We know Yonasan was destined to be the next king over the Jewish people. He was next in line to the throne. And what did Yonasan do? As we read in the Haftarah last week, basically he handed over the Malchus, he handed over the kingship to his friend David, because he felt that David was the one who was, you know, more appropriate for the task. You know, tremendous degree of self-effacement and self-sacrifice that was evidenced by Yonasan, the son of Shaul. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, in recounting who he thinks is in that league with Yonasan ben Shaul, says, my father, you know, was also like that. You know, my father was also a tremendous anav, a tremendously modest person, a tremendously humble person, you know, in a league with Yonasan, the son of Shaul. So that's again a little bit of a picture of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. On the one hand, he's the Nasi. On the one hand, he's the one who is, you know, ostensibly the leader of Klal Yisrael. On the other hand, his personal character traits are incredibly, incredibly self-effacing and filled with a sense of anivus. In terms of the statement which he makes, the author of the Shalmei Moshe points out that, you know, the statement is especially appropriate for someone living in a time of chaos and lawlessness, which Rav Shimon Gamliel certainly was. There are three things that keep the world going: din, justice, emes, peace, and shalom, and emes, truth, and shalom, peace. In other words, if a society is not at peace, if a society is based on lawlessness and, you know, a lack of truth, that society is going to fall apart. Well, that was a pretty good description of the way things were at the time of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Again, the Roman government crushing you know, the practice of the Jewish religion, a lack of peace, you know, a lack of real justice, a lot of injustice being carried out. And one can certainly appreciate Rav Shimon Gamliel sort of lamenting, you know, the lack of, you know, what needs to be in place to keep a society running. And it's easy to understand how this would be on the forefront of his mind, and something he spoke about a lot, you know, during that period of chaos in general.
Most of Klal Yisrael were living in Eretz
Yisrael at the time. Yeah. Yeah, no, so I mean, there were Jews in Bavel, certainly. And in fact, there seem to be indications that Rav Shimon Gamliel, early in his life, went into hiding in Bavel at some point as well, because after all, there was a period of time wasn't so safe to be a Nasi. But at the same time, you know, the majority of the Rabbanim certainly lived in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, real Torah scholarship only came to Bavel with Rav, who was the Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. So, in other words, there were Jews in Bavel. There were Jews in Bavel, but the Rabbanim were mostly in Eretz Yisrael. That's what you don't find Tanoim in Bavel. You know, you find Amoraim in Bavel, but the Tanoim are all still based in Eretz Yisrael. So they were all still... They were all under the thumb of the Roman government. Right. You know, Bavel was under the Parthians. They had a different government. But Eretz Yisrael was controlled by the Roman Empire. So they were all suffering in that way. So on a very simple level, that's how we can understand, you know, this emphasis on Din, Emes, and Shalom. Ribbono Shalom, we're going through difficult times. At the very least, just, you know, get us through. You know, that we should have peace, we should have justice, we should have truth. Mefarshim, however, going back a very long time, ask that the statement of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel at the very end of Perek Aleph seems to be a little bit at odds with the famous statement of another Shimon, Shimon HaTzadik, at the very beginning of Perek Aleph. Shimon HaTzadik, we read Perek Aleph, Mishnah Beis, Shimon HaTzadik famously used to say, Al Shlosh Dvarim Ha'olam Omed. Right? The world stands on three things: Al Torah, V'al Ho'avodah, V'al Gemilas Chasadim. So here, Rav Shimon Gamliel is coming along and saying, there are three things upon which the world is kayum, it exists: Din, Emes, and Shalom. Is this a different perspective? Is this a complementary perspective? Where do these two statements fit in with one another? So interestingly enough, this contradiction or seeming contradiction is actually discussed in the halachic works. You know, normally when we have comments on Pirkei Avos, they tend to be more, you know, ethical or homiletic. You know, you don't find discussions in Shulchan Aruch necessarily that really focus on the ideas in Pirkei Avos. But here, the Tur, the son of the Rosh, Rabbi Yaakov Bala Turim, in his famous work, the Arba Turim, which was the precursor to Shulchan Aruch, in the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, which lays out the laws of how to adjudicate Batei Din and how Dayanim are supposed to work and all of that, so he starts off the very beginning of Choshen Mishpat analyzing these two Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, you know, and analyzing what seems to be the contradiction between them. And the Tur, at the very beginning of Choshen Mishpat, starts out as follows. The very first word in the Tur is Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Al Shlosh Advarim Ha'olam Kayim Al Adin V'Ala Emes V'Ala Shalom. He quotes our Mishnah, and then he writes as follows: Pirush Harav Rabbeinu Yona, famous Rabbeinu Yona, the medieval Spanish Rishon, who is probably most famous as the author of the Sefer Sharei Tshuva, very very basic Sefer of Muster. Was very commonly studied during Elul. So, Pirush Harav Rabbeinu Yona, Ein Peirusho Shebishvil Gimel Dvarim Elu Nivra Ha'olam. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel does not mean to say that the world was created for the sake of these things. Sharei B'Tchilas HaPerek Omer Al Shlosh Dvarim Ha'olam Omer Ve'Einam Elu Shezocher Kan. After all, Shimon HaTzadik said that the world stands on Torah Avodah and Gvinos Chasadim. And that's not what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying over here. Ela mitchila amar shebishvil gimel dvarim nivra ha'olam. Ve'elu hein, ha-Torah v'avola v'agimles chasadim. So rather, how do you reconcile these two Mishnayos? So says Rabbeinu Yonah, Shimon HaTzadik in the beginning of the Perek meant to say that the world was created for the sake of three things. The world was created for the sake of Torah, for the sake of Avoda, for the sake of Gemilas Chasadim. These are the reasons behind which the world was created. V'kan omar ha'olam kayom, as opposed to Shimon HaTzadik, who said that the world stands on three things, so Shimon Gamliel says that the world exists, or article translates, endures based on three things. What does that mean? Achar shenivra ha'olam miskayim al yedei elu. Right. In other words, maintenance and a reason for creation are two different things. Shimon HaTzadik meant to say that the world was created by virtue of these three things, and you know, in order, the reason that God created the world was for the sake of Torah, for the sake of Avodah, for the sake of Gmilas Chasadim. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, fine, okay, but what enables the day-to-day maintenance of the world? What keeps the world going? And there, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, it's Din, Emes, and Shalom. In other words, these three things are the oil to keep the engine of the world going. You know, in any endeavor, there's the purpose behind the endeavor, the mission statement that's associated with the endeavor, but then there's what actually keeps the endeavor going. You know, what keeps the endeavor going are these things. You know, the purpose of creation is one thing, and you know, what keeps the world going is something else. That's the interpretation offered up by Rabbeinu Yonah.
That's why Hashem had decided to destroy the world,
because
those things
were existing. Right, because those things were no longer there. So it's interesting to note. So okay, so that's the position of the tour, as you know, the position of Rabbeinu Yonah is quoted by the tour. It's a nice way of introducing the whole idea of halachas that relate to Bate Din, to courts. In other words, the follow through from that is you see that you need din, you see that you need justice in order to keep the world going, right? It's important for the maintenance of the world. And therefore, here I am, I'm going to tell you all the halachas of Choshen Mishpat as to how that's supposed to work exactly. It's a nice introduction. Interestingly enough, Rav Yosef Karo, who's famous to us as the author of Shulchan Aruch, lived in the 1500s in Tzfas, Rav Yosef Karo is not happy with this interpretation of the Rabbeinu Yonah. And in his commentary, we know that Rav Yosef Karo, before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, wrote a commentary on the tour called Beis Yosef. It's actually interesting, when Rav Yosef Karo wrote the Beis Yosef, it was a very long, detailed commentary on the tour. So, you know, he knew that the average person wasn't going to really be able to sit down and go through the Beis Yosef on a regular basis. So he wrote this abridged version of the Beis Yosef called the Shulchan Aruch, which he said, yeah, anyone could go through like once a month. You'll just go through the whole Shulchan Aruch. And, you know, this way you'll quickly review all of the ideas that I have in the Beis Yosef. Well, you know, that didn't...
Still available?
What's that?
You can get the full...
What's that? The Beis
Yosef?
No. Beis Yosef is printed right here. It's any copy of the tour. That's the standard commentary on the tour. It's actually very interesting. They put out a number of years ago, you know, what happened? So he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, and then everybody wrote commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch itself is voluminous. You know, it's very hard to just sit and read through the Shulchan Aruch. So a number of years ago, somebody decided that they're going to reprint the Shulchan Aruch without any commentaries, and broken up into like a 30-day cycle. So in other words, they have little notes on the side. If you go through this amount on the first day of the month, this amount on the second day of the month, in 30 days, you actually can go through, you know, the whole Shulchan Aruch. I mean, you have to read fast. And, you know, again, the truth is the Shulchan Aruch was written, as a very, you know, simple, straightforward presentation of halacha. What happened is that there were commentaries that developed afterwards, so now it's not so simple just to go through Shulchan Aruch, but the text itself, the Shulchan Aruch, is fairly straightforward. In any case, right, so it's interesting, he only talks about Din, Emes, and Shalom, and as the word Mishpat is used in the pasuk that he quotes, right? In the pasuk, Emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sha'areichem, the implication seems to be that Din and Mishpat are synonymous, at least from the psukim. So, you know, in his Beis Yosef commentary, Rav Yosef Karo raises, I'll just read it from here, it's a little bit easier, a little bit more wieldy. The Beis Yosef raises the following issue. He says, If the world was created on the basis of the three amudim, the three pillars of Shimon HaTzadik, Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim, how can it be that those are not sufficient to maintain the world? He doesn't buy into this distinction Rabbeinu Yonah makes between the reasons for which the world was created versus the maintenance of the world. So he suggests an alternate explanation. Says Rav Yosef Karo, Shimon HaTzadik was speaking in a time when the Beis HaMikdash stood. When the Beis HaMikdash stood, what kept the world afloat was Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is speaking in a time when the Beis HaMikdash is no longer here. And I think it's very striking if you look at the structure of Perek Aleph of Pirkei Avos. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is the very first statement we have from someone who lived at a time when the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. Right? And it was all the way up through Mishnah Yud Zayin. Everyone who has been quoted in Perek Aleph lived during a time when there was either a Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu, or a Beis HaMikdash. And here, for the very first time, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is speaking during a period of time where the Beis HaMikdash is no longer there. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel did not witness the second Beis HaMikdash. I mean, he was in all likelihood born after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So in a world where there is no Beis HaMikdash, how do you account for the three pillars of Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim? They're all lacking. Says the Beis Yosef, Avodah is clearly lacking. Avodah is all about the service of God through the Korbanos and the Beis HaMikdash. Clearly, where there's no Beis HaMikdash, we can't have Avodah in the strict sense of the term. But he says even Torah and Gemilas Chasadim are lacking, because the situation of our Golos prevents us from being able to learn Torah properly. And in the time of Shimon ben Gamliel, this was probably especially true. Remember, he's speaking in the time of the Hadrianic persecutions. Rabbi Akiva was put to death for teaching Torah in public. So, you know, Torah isn't such an option anymore. Certainly not on the level on which we'd like to be able to learn Torah. And Gemilas Chasadim as well, you know, the kind of kindness that we can extend, you know, one Jew to another, is dependent on some extent on our having autonomy. In other words, if we're living under the thumb of some oppressive government, we can still do chesed to one another, you know, but it's a lot harder. We're limited in what we can do for other people. So our avodah is gone, our Torah is limited, our gemilas chasadim is limited. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is basically asking the question, so now in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, why is there still a world? What's keeping the world up? The three pillars of Shimon HaTzadik are gone. So to answer that, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says we may not have those three pillars in their fullness, but we have a little bit of those three pillars still extant. We have Din, we have Emes, and we have Shalom. And Din, Emes, and Shalom are our poor man substitutes for Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim that we used to have when the Beis HaMikdash stood. Torah, in the end of the day, is about learning what's right and doing what's right. So Din, justice, preserves Torah, right? Because the Din makes sure that people don't do what's right. Avodah is about cultivating a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Chosamo Emes. His seal is truth. So if we adhere to the idea of Emes, we may not be serving God of the Beis HaMikdash through Karbanos, but, you know, it's something. It's in the same track as serving Hashem through the Karbanos and the Beis HaMikdash. And Shalom? Well, we may not be able to have Gemilas Chasadim in the fullest sense of the word. We can't have Chesed organizations in quite the same way that we'd like to, now that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash and we're under the thumb of the Roman government, but at least we can try to be nice to one another. At least we can try to have Shalom with one another. And in some way, you know, this emphasis on Din, Emes, and Shalom can kind of substitute for Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim in some way or another. If we were to summarize this position of the Beis Yosef, so we find a very interesting sort of parallelism between the beginning of Perek Aleph, Pirkei Avos, and the end. Right? The Perek is sort of bracketed by the statement of Shimon HaTzadik at the very beginning, and the statement of Shimon and Gamliel at the very end. And essentially, the parak starts off telling us what's the ideal, you know, when there's a Beis HaMikdash, how are things supposed to operate in the best possible fashion. By the end of the parak, there's no more Beis HaMikdash, and the question is, how do we keep these lofty ideals going when there is no Beis HaMikdash? Comes from Shimon Gamliel, really the first representative in the parak of the post-Golos experience, and he says, look, we can't do it 100%, but we're going to try. We're going to try to substitute three things for the Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim that were the pillars of Jewish life, you know, when there was a Beis HaMikdash. It's not going to be exact, it's not going to be, you know, quite on the level of the way things were initially, but this is the best we can do under the circumstances. There's still life for Yiddishkeit even after the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. And that's
new normal.
Right, this is the new normal. And, you know, now that's basically how the parak ends. Even with the Churban, we have a way to go forward and to preserve these lofty ideals. You know, Yiddishkeit is not going to be destroyed, Chalila, with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Even with our Galus, we still have a way of continuing things and perpetuating things so that Yiddishkeit can stay alive. That is the sort of the way that the parak ends off, a little bit on a melancholy note, but nonetheless on a realistic note, you know, that the great Manhigei Yisrael always found a way to keep things going, you know, even in the darkest of times. That's represented by Rav Shimon Gamliel. Just a little bit of housekeeping. So Be'ezus Hashem, tomorrow I'm going to Eretz Yisrael for a week, so it will be a little bit difficult for me to give a shiur next week, although you're all invited. I will be in the Old City, Be'ezus Hashem, a week from today, so Sunday.
If
you're all there, I will do my utmost to give a class, certainly. The following week is Memorial Day. From my perspective, I'm happy to give the shiur. People around, I don't know if that. Yeah.
No problem.
Okay, good. So we'll pick up the following week, 10:15. Be'ezus Hashem. My plan is to do the very last Mishnah here, Reb Chanina ben Akasha, which sort of ends off the first parak. And Be'ezus Hashem, we will see everybody then.